How have you all kind of thought through the year, the calendar? Was there a date certain? Did you have a birthday party?
We did not have a birthday party. But we had this record planned for a while now, and since it came out earlier this year, it's all been kind of built around that. It feels a little bit funny celebrating 25 years when our dobro player's 25, but that's cool. You know, he kind of grew up listening to Blue Highway, which I didn't know until he got in the band. But and he knows a lot of Rob's breaks, you know, and he plays so tastefully. He's such a great player. My buddy Bobby said Gary's my favorite kind of player. He said he plays the song, not the instrument, and I think that's true, and it's really an important part of why he's a valuable addition to the band. We love him, and hope he stays forever. But it's been great, man. You know, with Gary coming on board early in the year, and then just kind of looking back, thinking, how is it possible we've made it 25 years? You know.
Well, yes, you've remarked on the exception that proves the rule, which is a band that has, against all odds, or against let's say against industry standards and, you know, past experience, stayed together. And let's start with personal chemistry and just the feeling of being able to negotiate issues and business strategy and travel routes and everything with the guys.
Yeah, we've been pretty much on the same page from the first day, and I think that page is pretty big. It involves respecting each other and just, you know, not taking things too seriously. I think people tend to do that sometimes, and what happens is that you get into arguments over things that don't matter, and people break up. You know, it's a lot of turnover in bluegrass bands. But we've been, you know, we all like each other. We all have a good time. We laugh. We carry on, cut up, still do. Mm-hmm. And I think that's essential. And we never got a bus. I think that may be a key why we're still together. Because a bus is great, but it costs a lot of money, puts a lot of financial strain on a band, and it brings you all together where you can't really get away from each other. And that sounds weird, but we travel separately, and we have separate hotel rooms. And I saw John Duffy talk about that years ago, and I thought, why would you want to do that? You know, because when I was in Alison Krauss's band, we all stayed in one room. And that's the way we did it, you know, and that's the way I'd done it for years before that. And so I didn't know any other way. But it has made a difference, and it gives you your sense of personal space, and it's just much easier that way.
So that's quite interesting. So, like, take me into that a little bit. So if you've got a tour that's rooted, you know, through the Northeast in February and March, you guys are all kind of getting in your cars and see you there. I'll book my own hotel. How far do you take that?
February, we're probably going to fly.
Okay.
But if it's a little later in the year, we may, and we have several shows, you know, a little tour set up. We may do a carpool situation with one or two of the guys, but a lot of times we rent cars. And so, you know, some of us may have stuff to do besides the band stuff. So you're coming from a different place, so you have to drive yourself, you know. And I'm kind of used to it. I did almost all the driving in the band when we had a van. We did have two band vehicles. They were Dodge vans, 15-passenger vans, and we wore both of them out.
Sure.
And I did most of the driving for that, so I'm kind of used to driving. I feel like that's what I get paid to do, and performing is a bonus at the end. But it seemed to have worked out. I think everybody just kind of likes making their own travel arrangements, and then we don't worry about it. You don't worry about anybody else's schedule. They all know, they all get itineraries. We have a road manager that gives us that, and so we know when we're supposed to be there.
So how well did you know each other as people when the band started? Did the personal chemistry predate and inform the decision to become Blue Highway?
It did a little bit. I knew Sean. I had done a little four-song demo that he played on a couple years before Blue Highway started. And I met Wayne when I was after I left Allison's band. I did a lot of things related to bluegrass. I just couldn't get bluegrass out of my system. and one of them was write articles for Bluegrass Unlimited. And a local mandolin player in Bristol, Tim Laughlin, had a band, and he wanted me to do an article for Bluegrass Unlimited. So I said, sure, and I met all of them and interviewed them, and I really liked the bass player. I thought, he's a very cool guy. And then I saw him play, and I said, the cat is really good. He's got a great tone to his voice, which he still does. He's still got this marvelous tone. And he sings on pitch, and he's a great bass player, plays in time. He's written some great songs. And I thought, if that band ever breaks up, because I would never go in and, you know, try to break that up, band up or ask him while he was still in it, might want to put together a little part-time band, and that's how that happened.
And that's Wayne Taylor.
That's Wayne Taylor. And Jason Burleson, I played with, I was in a group called Dusty Miller with Adam Steffi and Barry Bales and Tammy Rogers.
Oh, that's right.
And Brian
Fussler.
I saw
a picture of y'all recently. Yeah. What a band to have seen in the day. That well, is a cool group of people.
It was a fun band, and of course, all three of us, Barry and Adam and I, left to go with Alison Krauss in 1990. But there were a few shows that Brian Fessler, our banjo player who plays with the Rooks now, the band of Rooks,
right.
He couldn't make, so Jason filled in on banjo. And I knew him as a guitar player. He's a great swing jazz type Django player.
Nice.
We used to trade tapes out of Django stuff, you know. And so I knew Jason before, and I'm the one who I said, there's this cat I know who I think plays banjo still yet. So he tried out for us.
At that point, you had a sense of enough of mission that you were filling a chair. And
he was the last guy. Yeah, because I knew Rob Ikes because he used to come out with Allison on the road when I was in that band because he was a friend of Ron Block's, and he was just tagging along. He was just traveling with us. I remember we spent the night at Allison's mom and dad's house up in Illinois one time, and he laughed the whole time between, you know, Adam Steffi, and there was just a lot of laughing going on. And I always liked Rob, and he was an up-and-coming player, you know. He hadn't played with anybody really at that point. And I think he played with Lynn Morris and a couple other groups, but he was living in Nashville and looking for something to get into. So when I called him, he said, yeah, sure.
Was he 25 years old at the time?
He was. Yeah. You know, I think he was.
Oh, interesting. But he was the youngest member even through the all these years, right?
Was
he?
No. Sean was
born. Sean Lane's the youngest guy.
Sean was born in 71, I think. Mm-hmm. And I think Rob was born in 67. He and Jason, same age, roughly the same age. And Wayne was born in 55, and I was born in 60, so there you go.
So I'm looking at the discography. The first release is July 4th. How about that? 1995 on Rebel. And Rebel at the time would have been kind of riding high as the core of traditional bluegrass.
Absolutely.
And would have been a prestigious place to sign.
It was the label that, you know, between Rebel and Rounder, those were the two labels when I was a kid just getting in this bluegrass in the 70s. Mm-hmm. Oh, man. Think about the great groups. You know, my heroes, like the Country Gentlemen, Seldom Seen, Ralph Stanley, they were all on Rebel. And then Tony Rice and all those great records that he did, and J.D. Crowe and the New South, and just about everything that came along in the late 70s, early 80s was on Rounder, too, you know. So between those two, I thought, man, if we could get on that, I think that, you know, that's the way you think back then, you know. It's like, but I knew Dave Freeman, and I talked to him, and I gave him a demo tape that we had done at IBMA that year.
Yeah.
And it was in Louisville. We'd moved to Louisville by that point. And he called me just a little
while. We the IBMA, to be clear, not we the band.
No, yeah, right, yeah. Right. And, you know, he called me, and we didn't even have the right name. When we made that demo tape, we decided to call the band Hurricane Rain. And it was on the demo tape. And I started, I got them, you know, and I was working for a sign company at the time. And I opened up that box and I looked at those tapes and I said, Hurricane Rain. I said, we can't do this. So I called this Staus sign company and got some stickers that said Blue Highway. And I asked the guys if that would be okay, because that was on our list of names that we had.
Okay.
And I liked that name. I thought, that's pretty cool. I have no idea where it came from. But, and so, yeah, they sent me Blue Highway stickers. And so I still have some of those demo tapes.
Did you layered them over?
I layered it over. I took a Sharpie and marked out Hurricane Rain and put Blue Highway on it. So that's what Dave got, and that's what he decided to sign us with. So
you and Donald Trump have both manipulated a hurricane with a Sharpie.
Only time I've ever heard those words, me and Donald, you and yeah. Donald Trump.
Our first conversation about the band, we dwelled a bit because we were in East Tennessee, or around Kingsport, I think.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I know that's been most of y'all's homes, is, you know, within a kind of a range of that
it's
area.
It's my hometown.
Yeah. How do you feel like you guys came out of, spoke to, carry with you the particular musical vibe?
I think it was a big part of what we originally thought of, even if we didn't talk about it, because... you know, the Carter family, the Stanley brothers, all those great acts that were from that area. And, I mean, the Carter family was from right over the hill where I was born and raised, just literally right over the hill, except it was in a different state. And if I could have walked over the hill, it probably would have only took about 15 minutes.
Wow.
But if I had to drive, it took 45, you know, the way those way it is up there. And Sean is from Scott County, right near Wise County and Dickinson, where Ralph was from, up in Southwest Virginia. And Wayne was from Southwest Virginia also. He lived up at the time in Richlands, which is in Russell County, Virginia. And Jason was from Western North Carolina. So we, you know, and Rob really bought, he really, really bought into the idea of the band being kind of a roots thing that spoke to where we were from.
Mm-hmm. Even though he's California, but
even though he's from California,
he went native.
He did. He really did. He bought into it, and he really wanted to push that. He thought that was a big part of what we were, you know. Mm-hmm. And first time I heard Wayne and Sean sing together, I thought there must be something about that, because they had this thing, they had this buzz together when they sang that. I thought, wow, this could be good, you know. I remember sitting in the studio, and I leaned over and told Rob, I said, this could be good. when I heard that. And
that actually raises a question that I had carried around for this conversation, which was, describe the different vocal combos that have been the signature, because it's not one lead and one harmony. You have a wonderful array of tapestries of sounds.
Well, we like the duets, and we got two really cool singers who have that vibe, with Wayne and Sean. And I like the duet tradition in country music and bluegrass, especially the Stanleys and the Leuven brothers, and all of that great music, that the brother duets, you know. But we have a trio, too, where I sing the bottom part, and we have a quartet where Jason will come in and sing the bass a lot of times. And we've switched that out. Sometimes I've sang bass and Rob sang baritone. Later we did an album where Gavin Largent sang baritone and I sang bass. So we can switch it up, but I feel like the vocal aspect of the band is what's most important in the band. It's like, it's the biggest component of what we do.
Hmm.
So, you know, and then we have three guys that sing most of the lead. And Rob would sing occasionally, and Gary sings one on our new record. So we have four lead vocalists, mm-hmm. which gives us some flexibility, you know.
And flexibility, but with a consistency too. There's you know, no doubt who you're hearing, even though it may be a different emphasis of one.
No, and you know, those guys like Wayne and Sean, man, they both have that capability to sing lead and then flip up and sing tenor,
mm-hmm.
and they switch off. Sometimes Wayne sings tenor. Sometimes Sean sings tenor. It really helps to have people with that much range who can do that.
It's kind of the combination. It's kind of the way they layer against each other.
I think it is. Yeah. I think it's those two voices coming together.
So the kind of the most important thing to kind of put in the big picture perspective is the impact of the band and its influence, because it clearly has had. There's a feeling of bluegrass post-90s where you all define a flavor of tradition. You're known as innovators and yet not as experimenters, I think it might be fair to say.
Mm.
You're not a newgrass band, right. You're a bluegrass band. But and others right. have picked up on your sound in certain ways, and
that's cool.
I think there's a focus on, I think there's a natural result of being extremely in tune as vocalists and very good players who don't play a lot and who kind of keep in lanes and keep some real space, that there's something contemporary feeling about your records over the years. And I'm trying to put my finger on it. I'm curious what people tell you about your sound, or younger people who are like, you influenced us, how?
I don't hear a lot about that, so I don't know. But I know that kind of what we are thinking about, you're talking about stay in your lane. I like that. The main reason you do that is in service to the song.
Yeah.
And we're, as far as I'm concerned, we're a band of writers first, because we've done our own material almost exclusively since about 2000. And we did some before that too, but it's always been about the writing, and we've just been really lucky to have three guys that write a lot, and we have a lot to choose from. So we feel like whatever we come up with as an arrangement, it's going to serve the song, and whatever you play is supposed to serve the song. And if it doesn't, you should be the first one to know it. Mm-hmm. Nobody needs to tell you, and that's a good thing. We don't ever have to tell each other, you think this would be good here, you think that'd be, you know. It's not like that, because you know it yourself, and you should be able to figure it out yourself. And that's the way – that's part of the respect that we have for each other, I think, is it all goes back to that song.
Did you all think about or find yourself looking for ways early on to, you know, stand out and sound different and be unique, or did you think our personal chemistry and voices and we'll carry that? Or did you feel some obligation to innovate within the context of a mountain bluegrass band?
Probably not. I think we were just trying to do what came natural to us, but I do feel that you know, it was the material kind of dictating them once again what we did. And people told us, I know I remember people telling me when we first started, that I really like your band because it's very traditional, but it's also very progressive. It's like both. It falls in both of those
you
things.
You have heard that,
but
over
that's
the
what
years.
Yeah, I have heard that, but that's what we like. Mm-hmm. I mean, we all love first generation bluegrass, and we all love Newgrass Revival. We all love Tony Rice. We all love that aesthetic that they brought to the music, and it's got to come out. You know, what you love is going to come out eventually, and we all kind of love the same thing. So
I've got some songs in my head that I wanted to ask about. That Lonesome Pine.
Mm-hmm.
That one hit me hard, was a favorite, isn't it? When I spun the record, it's probably my DC days that I had that one on regular rotation. Is that a song that was, and I heard, and I was talking about Blue Highway with a friend of mine the other day, and they brought that song up. Is that a hit?
I guess, man. That was one of those songs that I heard Wayne sing with that other band I was telling you about that I was doing the article.
Oh, okay.
And I went to the down home in Johnson City and heard him play it, sing it, and I thought, man, that's a cool song. And when we first got together with what would become Blue Highway, that's the first song we did. So it goes back to the very, very beginning. And so, yeah, man, it's kind of bedrock for us. And it's a different kind of song, you know. I hear it and I think it's just so tied up with Wayne and his voice, mm-hmm. to me, because he wrote it, and it's just him, man. I don't know. I know that he didn't put the 2 minor, 3 minor thing in there. That is kind of a signature piece of that. That wasn't his idea. It was this banjo player, Tony Brown, that was on that demo tape. He was our original banjo player.
I thought that.
But he ended up not being able to tour. And but he's the guy that said, what if you put a little 2 minor here, a little 3 minor? And that makes that – it really makes a difference in that song. But I think of Wayne now. You know, his mother was alive when we started the band, but I think my mama smiles so soft and warm, and I'm thinking, well, I remember that was her. That was her.
Right.
You know, it's so tied up with Wayne.
Well, that's interesting. I had no idea how far back that went with y'all.
Yeah.
And then, you know, iconic song, One Day When My Last Line Is Written.
Someday.
Yeah. Someday. Which definitely heard first at Merlefest, and that became something that just people waited for. I remember, and it had a great story too. It had family ties adapted from, I think Wayne's.
It was my ex-wife's aunt.
There you go.
Her name was Olive Stockton, and my ex-wife had given me a scrap of paper that had those lyrics on it and said, this was my Aunt Olive's eulogy. She spoke it, it was spoken at her funeral. Mm-hmm. And she would get stuff published in the local newspapers, and that was one of them. And she said, just put it in your guitar case, you know, maybe someday you want to do something with it. And I think it was in there for a few years. Mm-hmm. And we were out in South Dakota, and somebody said, we need a good gospel song. And I said, this might work. And they said, well, how's it go? And I just started singing, someday when my last line is written. I just sang it the way it is that we do it now.
Right.
And they said, well, okay.
They fell into their, found their voices.
And they said, let's do it. And we worked it up, and we did it at that festival in South Dakota that we were doing that weekend.
Yeah.
And it's just amazing the response we've had to that song. Yeah. Just crazy.
And it, what, to be clear, it was the first time you had done the acapella of four voices around one microphone?
I think so.
Had, yeah.
I don't think we had done any other acapella songs at that point.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We'll talk about tapping into a tradition that needs to be nurtured, and, you know, finding a real signature that's not exactly what you all, you know, it lets the show take this neat step to the left, and everybody has this moment with it. That's cool.
That's what I like about it. It's a great change of pace in the show, but I still get people come up every show that say that song means so much to us. We buried our father or our grandfather or some relative, and it just meant the world to us, and it still means a lot to me when they say that, you know.
And I think you've added a few gospel tunes of the same nature in the years since, I think.
Yeah, a cappella songs. Mm-hmm. And I mean,
it must be fun to sing.
It is. You know, we had done one song before that was kind of an a cappella tune, God Moves in a Windstorm, but it was with a guitar. It wasn't a totally a cappella thing, but it was a quartet. And Sean played with Doyle Lawson for several years. So,
yeah,
he knew the singing, and he knows how parts are arranged and stuff like that. And so he came up with the next a cappella song we did himself, that I Am Near the Gate, that we recorded on Ricky Skeggs' the album we did with Skeggs. And so, yeah, I mean, that's a big part of who we are, is that quartet. And then Wondrous Love was another one.
Yeah, that's right. I was new there. I was had one in the
one's different because it was a Sacred Harp number. I found it on Alan Lomax collection of North Alabama Sacred Harp singers.
Mm-hmm.
And I got that CD, and I was listening to it, and that one really jumped out at me, that Wondrous Love, and I thought, I think we can do this, you know. And Alan O'Brien produced that record that we did, and he said, oh yeah, I know, let's make a choir at the end. And we did, you know. He sang on it, and we had a bunch of people. We had multi-track voices, and it kind of sounded like one of those old Sacred Harp conventions, which I thought was great, you know.
For real.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for the time. We'll wrap up here with just you know, kind of the inevitable, how this with this record and looking forward and a big year. But you know, how are things going?
Things are going great. We're just thrilled with Gary. You know, he's such a great guy and brings such a positive energy, and we just love his plan and everything about him. And so he's kind of brought a new energy to the band. And you know, after 25 years, you tend to look at it more as a job. Obviously, mm-hmm. I mean, it's always been a job, but you know, even more now. But just enjoying it after 25 years. Just glad to be here. Really, seriously. We thought about renaming the band Antiques Roadshow this year, but I've heard that's taken, so.
Well, congratulations again.
Thank you, man.
And thanks for the time today.
Thanks, Craig. I appreciate it.